Hello and welcome to the Business Marketing Club podcast for B2B marketing people who want to get on and stay ahead. My name's Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer and I'm chair of the Business Marketing Club Network. In this episode, I'll be speaking to Sarah Donnelly, the Strategic Marketing Director at Blick Rothenberg, to Adele Gantus, the MD of Lapis Angularis, to Alex Brayshaw, Managing Partner at Ogilvy, and to Giles Barry, Senior MD at FTI Consulting, about what B2B marketing books we should be reading. Hey, the library awaits, so let's begin. B2B marketing is ever-changing, and it's important for all practitioners to keep on top of developments if they're to stay current. My first guest to discuss how to stay current is Strategic Marketing Director at Blick Rothenberg, Sarah Donnelly. Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So, Blick Rothenberg then, who are they?
So, Blick Rothenberg are a firm of accountants. We're a top 20 firm of accountants. And we operate across private client, also corporate, work for a lot of corporates. And it's a great firm that has grown significantly, particularly over the last 3 years, and is enjoying year-on-year growth. And it's a real family environment. It's an environment where people are encouraged to be themselves and to really succeed.
And I guess it's important in that context then that you stay ahead, you stay current and look at what's going on and look at what the future has in store. So what have you been reading or watching or listening to that has made a difference to the way that you've been able to do that?
I tend to have a very eclectic taste in music and books and things that I watch. Something that I thought would be interesting to share with you was I've recently finished First Man In, Leading from the Front, which is a book by Ant Middleton. And you may have seen him on shows like SAS, He Who Dares Wins. He's a really interesting person. He has achieved the Holy Trinity of armed forces service, which is being in the UK's most elite forces. The book is not just his life story, but he also talks about lessons that he's learned, which I find really interesting.
So this isn't how you apply your SAS techniques to taking out the competition?
Absolutely not, no. It's much more about any book I read, I tend to think about how can I apply that to my life and how can I apply that to my day-to-day. Mm. And particularly when you get to a leadership level, I think it's important to take a step back at any time that you're reading something, particularly when it's a true life piece, and say, you know, what are my challenges? What does it mean to me? What does it mean to the people I work with? Mm. And I really enjoy reading that sort of thing. And it resonated with me because he talks a lot about leadership and where better to learn about leadership than somewhere like the armed forces, really.
So what sort of leadership skills do you need to apply in your day job that Ant has recommended?
He talks about three things that really stand out for me and resonate with me. The first is understand who you are and be the real you. Don't try and be anybody else. Just strive to be the best you. That's really important because good leaders appreciate that their own strengths and being themselves, but also they appreciate each individual within the team and what skills and also personality they bring to the team and then play to that person's strengths. Mm. The second thing that he talks about is accept that sometimes by being the best you, you're actually going to come second, and that's okay too, because no team and no army is built of everybody individually wanting to come first. You have to have people that are prepared to not come first for the team, and actually if you bring that together, you can have a much more winning team. And the third thing he talks about is know your demons and confront them. Make them work for you rather than against you. And I think confronting our demons is very difficult for anybody because you're recognising parts of yourself that aren't your best parts, that are maybe negativities that creep in. Mm. And if you don't recognise those things about yourself, how can you be a good leader? So I think it's really important to say, you know, if you don't cope very well with stress or if you don't cope very well with a crisis or if day to day you let meetings build up and you don't have the time for your team, actually, are you being a good leader? So what are the negative things that you bring in that you can address and how can you help your team to do the same? So I think that's interesting. It's made me kind of reflect on on myself and think about each day. You know, everybody's facing challenges in one way or another.
Mm, and so why has that changed the way that you look at things?
I try and be empathetic all the time. You know, I try and think about other people, but I do challenge myself to be better. And that means I can be hard on myself, but I can also expect a lot of people around me. What it's made me think about is, you know, every single person that I come across each day can only be the best they can be, which is just, that's great, that's yeah. fine. That they maybe are having challenges that I don't know about, and so to take that into account, particularly when I'm asking them to get involved in something in marketing, that they maybe don't necessarily find that easy. And also accept that I'm not always going to be the best, but I can be the best that I can be.
Nice. So what does that actually mean in terms of what you do differently?
I take a bit more time to take a step back and think about the people in the room when I go into any meeting. If I'm asking stakeholders to get involved in marketing, I think about how much exposure have they had to myself and my team before? How much do they, what do they get out of it? What's in it for them? And therefore, how we can do it to make a benefit for both my team and for them. And so that's, it's day to day, just taking a look at things and taking a step back and saying, what do I expect from this particular campaign or this yeah. particular project, and being realistic about it okay. rather than just always expecting it to be the best and then the next one has to be better than that. Actually, what's gone wrong, what's gone right, and take a step back and have a think about how we could do it differently next time.
Cool. So this is available presumably at Amazon and all good bookstores.
Yep, absolutely.
And just give us the name again, First Man In.
First Man In, Leading From The Front. And it's because he would normally be the first man in any dangerous situation.
Wow. Sarah Donnelly, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
My next guest is Adele Gantus, who is a specialist in marketing operations and MD at Lapis Angularis. Adele, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So what have you been reading that has made a difference to the way that you do your day job?
I find my inspiration from different places. So books, posts on LinkedIn, which sometimes are quite interesting and they generate quite the discussion. But one book that actually stayed with me from about 25 years ago, and that's showing my age maybe, is a book called Getting to Yes by Roger Fisher and William Ury. And it's like the negotiation Bible.
Okay.
And one of the first principles in that book that they talk about is getting to an agreement between both parties is much easier when we focus on the interest that we will each gain rather than sticking to a position just so that we win an argument.
Right.
So think about, you know, what's the interest you will get from getting to a deal rather than, you know, you will only pay X.
Mm.
And that principle, you can apply it anywhere. You can apply it to your personal relationships. You can apply it in business. In my area with marketing operations, it's really important because the main area I focus on is helping marketers become more efficient and effective, which means they need to change their behavior, how they do things.
Mm.
And with the flow of platforms that are coming in to automate tasks, people get scared about losing their job or being made redundant and so on.
Mm.
Whereas actually there's value in automating certain tasks. So these people who have an IP in the business can then think more strategically about how to make marketing better, how to improve the customer experience and so on.
Mm.
So if you're introducing a workflow management system that will automate tasks and people resist it, one of the interests they will get, other than maybe better job satisfaction, is also not having to sit down in the office until 10 p.m. every day or working from home, and rather be free to go out and have a social life or a family life.
Mm.
So think about what you will be getting out of it, both for the business and for you personally. And if you try and identify those interests at work, I guess you will be resolving conflict much sooner and getting projects implemented.
So
it's
to paraphrase, it's kind of looking at the mutual benefit in every relationship or in every project
mm-hmm.
that you need to be able to deliver.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's the value?
And so Does that mean that you take time out at the start of every day to look at the projects that you've got ahead and work that through? Is that how you apply this?
I wish I had time every day to do that. At the beginning of every project, it's important to identify the vision and the success metrics,
right,
and to communicate those. And if you do these things and you are able to communicate this to the stakeholders, as well as obviously the benefits they will get, and ingrain that in managing the project and looking at the status of the project, or when you are coming to a point where you have to make a decision, do we go with plan A or plan B? We can try and align those, or the results of those decisions, with what the objectives are, what the benefits are, what the interest is, and then proceed accordingly. I think for me, because I've been doing this for a long time, it's more about it's part of how I work, rather than a step I have to check, or a task I have to check every day.
It's not a tick box thing.
No.
It's something that is kind of built into everything that you do.
It's part of the methodology, yeah.
Doesn't it rather depend, though, on other people having that same philosophy? So I guess there's a part of this where you have to instill that way of thinking in either the team that you have or the organization that you're working with.
And that's why communication is key. So it's not just about having a status meeting with the core team every week or with the executive leadership team once a month. It's about communicating this along the way throughout the project, talking to them. And sometimes even if you haven't achieved progress since the last meeting, state it. Be open about it. Because one of the mistakes we often make is we expect success to come in a big bang. And sometimes it's the small wins that are valuable and that will keep the team going and that will ingrain that idea within the various team members that by changing slowly and by making these small wins, we are actually reaching that objective. Mm. So it's an ongoing conversation. Mm. And going back to things in terms of marketing operations driving change, it's not a dictatorship, right? It's a collaboration. So when I go in and I'm trying to work with a team to change how they do work, it's about understanding their challenges, what they expect as a benefit, and working on it in a collaborative way.
So people who have been listening to this might be thinking, oh, that's a really interesting a theory. We need to go back to the name of the book again. I noted it as Getting to You. Is that
to
right?
Yes.
Getting to Yes.
Yeah. So it's people saying yes to you.
And it's by?
Roger Fisher and William Ury.
How do I get hold
O-R-Y.
Of the book?
I guess on Amazon.
On Amazon, okay.
Any bookshop. It's a Bible. I mean, just type Getting to Yes. Everybody uses it.
It's a great recommendation. Yeah. Adele Gandis, thank you very much.
Thank you.
My next guest is managing partner of Ogilvy, Alex Brayshaw. Alex, welcome to the podcast.
It's great to be here.
So what have you been reading or seeing or downloading that has made a difference to the way that you do your day job?
Well, I'm a bit of a book fiend in that sense.
Okay.
I'm always reading something, whether it's a business book, fictional, something a bit sciencey, but I tend to kind of have a few books on the go at any given time. So I think the one that made the biggest difference to me is a book called Messy by Tim Harford, which is a fascinating book. And it starts to look at the requirement of the creative to have disorder and messiness around to get the best out of that creativity.
Okay.
And I loved it because I'm pretty organized. I'm pretty planned. I pretty know what I do most of the time, but I do need a bit of disorder to kind of get the creative juices going. And as someone sort of running a business who has a lot of creatives, you kind of want to understand how you create the right environment for that, because the book at its heart talks about, you know, in this structured world we live in, you know, the structure of half an hour meetings and schedules and all sorts of things, how do you allow the brain to kind of be free and come up with random kind of ideas? And it uses the most amazing kind of examples of things from music, from science, from tech, to kind of explain how the brain works and how creativity works. So, for example, it talks about Brian Eno, And Brian Eno has this idea called oblique strategies. I don't know if you've heard of it. Mm. And he did it with David Bowie and various people he's worked with, which basically said, look, in the studio session, when we're struggling to do stuff, here's some cards. And on the cards, there'll be things like change the instrument, change the seating, try something different. And it drives the artist crazy because there's a drummer having to play the guitar and things like that. And it just, but in the end, it creates these most amazing pieces of art and music.
It's going to change the way I do this podcast, I think, for the
exactly.
I kind of get how having these cards that kind of push you in perhaps unexpected directions can foster that creativity. But going back to the messiness, I'm still struggling a bit with that. So perhaps you can give me more on that.
Yeah, the idea that some of the best ideas have come out of boredom, trying different things, trying different angles on things, working with people you didn't expect to. So what does that mean for me in a creative agency? How do you put people together to create interesting ideas? So the messiness is about disrupting thinking, disrupting the norm, disrupting the way people work to try and create a different output. And if you think about the process of creativity, and even that sentence for me makes me go, oh God, the process of creativity. It's not a process. It's kind of an organic thing. So how do you have an interesting start point that allows creative people the freedom to find an interesting answer? And that doesn't have to be an ad or something like that. It could be the way you create an interesting creative strategy or an interesting creative view about data and all of these things. So how do you solve complex problems in a very creative way? Well, sometimes you have to kind of just do things a bit differently. There's even an example of a thing called Building 20 at MIT, which was this hodgepodge of post-war corridors and offices and things that created 9 Nobel Prizes. It created the Bose sound system because these random people were thrown together.
Right. So I'm not imagining that you get up very early in the morning and go round Ogilvy's offices and just scatter people's organised desks into disarray. So what do you do differently as a result of reading that?
So I think what we do, we try to encourage people to come out of their normal environment, so find different places to work with different people. So we don't have typical, in our B2B team, we don't have typical teams of creatives who work together day in, day out. Mm. We mix and match our creative teams. So they're always working with different people. We might have a creative team that consists of a behavioral science person, a UX person, a data person. Mm. So mixing up the types of people, but also starting to find ways that say, if the brief is this, is there a different start point? So actually, if the challenge is around, we need to find a way to engage better with our customers, actually, is that the start point? Or is the start point, we're just not creating interesting content? So if we're not creating interesting content, what are the themes we should be talking about? What is the market talking about? Where's our white space that we can talk through? So finding different start points and then creating different environments and different teams to come up with more creative solutions.
Great. So that's Messy by Tim Harford.
Yes.
You also had a video, I think, to talk about.
I did. And this is great. It's a guy called Adam Morgan from an agency called Eat Big Fish. And he's on YouTube. He's got all sorts of videos, and he's a really interesting guy. And I think it's from 2017, and he was talking about the way in which we tell stories in a way that people can understand quickly and easily. So he talked about the notion of fashion shows.
Right.
So Tom Ford talked a lot about. He has to create an environment to tell a story in 13.3 minutes. That's all he's got on a fashion show catwalk. So he spent all year creating these collections, and he's got 13 minutes to tell that whole story. And I was like, I love that. I think that's brilliant. Mm. So Adam Morgan talked about the constraints of that and why that 13 minutes is such a tricky kind of thing to do. And I took that back to the agency, and I looked at it, and I started to look at The pitches we've done, the presentations we do to clients. I looked at sales presentations that we have from clients, all of those different pieces of content. And of course, they were tomes of hundreds of slides and all sorts of information. But did they tell a story? And I set a challenge to the team and said, we have to tell our story in a pitch with a client on a project. We have to tell it in 13 minutes. Oh, but that's only 10 slides. Yeah. And if we can't tell it in that time, we need to leave the room because people aren't going to get it. So that was the challenge we set. And I just think it's an incredible video. It's a great story. And I think taking cues from other industries, something like fashion, into our industry is really important.
And do you think that now, I'm assuming that the team has got the Ogilvy story down to 30 minutes or less.
Absolutely.
Is it a better story as a result?
Is it a better story? It's a better start point because I think you capture people's attention more quickly. You get all of your key points in. And I used to work with a guy who used to say, you know, try and get 3 points in. If you can get 3 points in, people will remember it. And it makes you do that. And I think we are doing a better job of it. I think it allows you to then expand into different areas. So if you want to go deep into certain areas, that's fine. But I think we've managed to get those stories and tell the kind of right creative stories in that 13 minutes.
Brilliant to have you here. Alex Brayshaw, Managing Partner of Ogilvy. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My next guest is Senior Managing Director at FTI Consulting, Giles Barry. Giles, thanks for coming to the podcast.
Dave, thanks for having me.
So what have you been reading then that makes a difference to the way that you do your day job?
Well, a bit of a jolt, actually, Dave. There was a piece in The Guardian, just published it on 28th of January by a journalist called Sarah Manavis. Why the BBC is so bad at engaging younger audiences.
Okay.
Subtext, young people want shared content. Sorry, young people want content shared on social media platforms they actually use. The BBC must keep up or lose them. Now, Sarah has in this article driven a stake through the heart of anyone who works at the BBC because they think they're contemporary and they're desperately keen to attract under 35s. But this piece, I know Sarah because she's a contemporary of a colleague of mine. She's in her early to mid 20s. This piece absolutely pulls no punches in uncovering just how far short the BBC is on this. You know, what social media the BBC uses is far from millennial friendly. A tepid array of memes on Instagram, mostly newsy Twitter accounts with Facebook pages that share BuzzFeed style videos of the kind that are already tired cliches in 2015. You know, that is woeful because they obviously, I think the people at the BBC are putting this stuff out, think it's probably really good. But to have that played back to you by someone who's early to mid 20s is kind of heartbreaking. But, you know, I think the BBC, its bigger problem is it's lost touch with its audience. And what must be really worrying for them is it's not only lost touch with an audience that was kind of, you know, pro-Brexit, if you like, but it's also lost touch with the younger people. So kind of what is going right? You know, they talk about something called The Next Episode, which is a news podcast aimed at under-35s. Then ad for the podcast acknowledged the BBC has a problem and it wanted younger audiences to love us, not tolerate us. Then Sarah carries on to say, since launching, The Next Episode has fallen flat. It's hard to find a single tweet or Instagram post from a young person in the last 6 months saying anything about the podcast. And almost every single post that does praise the show from that period is from someone who works at the BBC.
Brutal. It is. But you're quite close to, I guess, the kind of BBC community from the work that you yourself do. Do you reckon it's an organisation that can change in the way that Sarah suggests it should?
There's brilliant journalists there. And it's absolutely best in class in terms of its contemporaries. You know, I think it's a fantastic organisation, and I have the highest respect for them. I do think they think about who they need to think about who they take on. There's been a sort of element of recruiting in their own image, and you know, there's a middle management tier there that is probably desperately trying to commission these sorts of programs. I'm a real believer in, if they want to appeal to people in their early 20s, they need to start giving more responsibility at the BBC to people in their early 20s. You know, it's going to have to be self-generated.
And does it mean in the meantime, for your work, when you're trying to target audiences, I guess, below the age of 30, the BBC isn't your first go-to place?
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting. The you know, some of the other platforms that Sarah talked about in her article, we are at my company FTI engaging with a lot. So YouTube is look, you only have to see what your own kids are watching. They don't really watch the TV in the sense of the you know, the traditional channels anymore, but you drive a lot of traffic for clients if you get something on YouTube or podcasts like this one. Sarah also talks about TikTok, short form video sharing app, hugely popular amongst under 18s. Fantastic. We will be looking at that. You know, there's so much that people are learning and changing. That I think you have to be really, really agile.
And does that also affect, Giles, the sort of people that you recruit at FTI?
Yeah, absolutely. We want people who are disruptors, people who've got original ideas, people you can put in charge of, you know, digital and social programs that are going to be at the cutting edge. I mean, it's a crowded space, but you can't have people with too many ideas. You never can. And we'd always encourage them to be taking us away from traditional avenues into new fields, because I think you can never be working on too many platforms.
Okay. So that's the Guardian article. I think you've also got a book, which is for people listening in, I can tell you it's a book that has got lots of kind of folds in its edges to kind of attract you to particular pages within the book. I can see Giles's ringed paragraphs within the book. It's clearly well used.
Well, it's an interesting book. That's the talk of real estate, Dave, where I'm engaged a lot. It's called Rethinking Real Estate: A Roadmap to Technology's Impact on the World's Largest Asset Class, by a man called Dror Poleg. And what I think is interesting about it, real estate, it's around us. It's something we all use all the time. It's going through a bit of a crisis in some parts of it at the moment, because the offices world wants people who are operating in kind of WeWork type environments rather than very corporate environments. The retail world has been blown to pieces by the likes of Amazon. Dror, in his book, talks about what I just think are some really interesting new concepts. And I could talk you through one or two of them.
Yeah, sure.
We've got a company called The Dreamery, which is a physical location where customers can book 45-minute nap sessions. For $25, customers get a soft drink, a pair of pyjamas, and a private space to relax with a Casper. This is a company behind it, a Casper mattress. Beyond the potential hospitality revenue, Casper is using the space to let potential customers test drive its mattresses. Casper is an online mattress retailer. The Dreamery is all about letting people experience stuff. And I think one of the futures for retail is experience. You know, rather than go to the shop just to buy the boring old mattress, if you can go to the Dreamery for $25, you know, you actually get to have quite a nice little afternoon out that's going to make you perhaps buy that mattress far more. And I just think retailers are having to think about things way more. Everything was easy for them before.
Yeah.
And now they have to be much more creative.
Yeah, there's no reason why you would go to the shop when you can just order something online. So they're having to create some kind of experience to drive people to that space.
I mean, another one, which Dror talks about in his book, is French women's wear brand BA and SH. Every Friday afternoon, visitors to its New York City store can borrow some of the clothes on display for free as long as they return by the following Monday. The goal is to make shoppers feel trusted and part of something while allowing them to try on the company's products and become long-term customers. It also helps reduce the cost of delivery and returns. Again, what's clever about that is it's expensive in terms of customer acquisition, but it's about trust, it's about experience, it's about empowering the customer. It's just quite a lot. It's so much less confrontational than the transaction of buying and selling. Yeah. I get the risks. You know, of course, there are cynical people out there who will trash the clothes or just mess people about. But again, I think it goes back to a kind of different way of thinking these days where people are interested in sharing and collaborating and not being cynical and ripping people off. Mm.
And from a marketing and communications perspective, what does it mean for you? So as you read this, what sort of actions are you kind of prompted to take?
Look, I think they're both great stunts, aren't they? You know, so let's not get away from that. You know, they're publicity seeking. They've made it
and
into
they've worked.
A book.
Yeah,
they've made
yeah.
it into a book. You know, I think it just goes to this idea of people being empowered and trusted, being your friends. You know, bringing them into your community, and more of a sort of a kind of membership approach to marketing than might exist before, where it's just a sort of hard sell, really.
Giles Bowie, Senior Managing Director at FTI Consulting. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.
And that's it. That's library closing time. That's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Sarah Donnelly, Adele Gantus, Alex Brayshaw and Giles Bowie. And hey, thanks to you as well. Why don't you let us know what you think of today's podcast? Give us a rating or a review or drop us a line at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And hey, if you've got something interesting, practical and visionary to share with our listeners, why not volunteer to sit in the hot seat opposite me and be a guest on a future podcast? But absolutely no sales pitches and thank you, but no thank you to product demos, really no creds presentations. And please leave your theoretical nonsense outside of the door. It's absolutely practical insight that we're looking for here. You might also want to join the Business Marketing Club for events, mentoring and thought leadership for the B2B marketing community. I've worked it out and it costs less than 34 packets of Waitrose strawberries to sign up for just 1 year, which has to be good value. You can have too many strawberries, I think. I'm Dave Stevens. Thanks very much for listening.